stopped. They were just shot. They had a wagon following us, and those who couldn't make it were just shot, and they were just, that was it.
How did you get food?
Well, they had a wagon bring us the little soup there during the day. That was our ration, and the same thing at night.
And did you ever eat anything besides regular food, like grass, or did you?
No.
And how did you get water?
When we were getting the food, they had a drink of water with it.
And who was guarding you?
There were guards all along the road. They were riding along in a truck, and we were marching.
And would they talk to you at all?
No.
And who were you walking together with?
Whoever happens to be nearby.
So, I mean, were you walking together with your cousin, or...?
Sometimes, sometimes not. We're trying to keep together with my cousin and his mother and father.
And how many days were you walking for?
I remember there were several days and nights until we got to Tomashov, Mazovyetsk. They had a house there in the jail until they got a hold of the boxcars and loaded us into the boxcars.
Now, do you have any idea what percentage of the people died on the march?
No. Quite a lot, because it was hot weather. It was in August.
Do you think that more than a quarter of the people died?
At least that much, maybe more.
I mean, do you think half the people died?
No, with less than half. I don't know how many. Those younger ones kept moving, the older ones didn't.
Right. Did you think of trying to escape?
At one time I did. And I realized it would be no way. Our Polish community was not very supportive. There were no place where to hide.
Do you remember what you were going to do to escape?
No.
Were you going to escape by yourself or with someone else?
No, you couldn't tell anybody. You couldn't tell anybody because it may leak.
Right. Okay, so then they put you in that place.
Put us on the train.
Now, what kind of train was this?
It was boxcar with a slit there, and it wasn't a window, with a slit there. Then the train stopped at the station. I could look out to see what station it was. One time it stopped, and I looked out, and I could see Prague. As I figured, we're in Czechoslovakia. See, a lot of the railroad tracks were bombed out, so we had to go back and forth and back and forth. Then the train started moving again, and at one time, the train, instead of going forward, started backing up. It was backing in, and all of a sudden, I see there's barbed wires, and I look up and I saw the sign Auschwitz, Albert macht das Leben siehst, and my heart at that time started beating so fast I figured it's going to jump out.
I mean, did you know what Auschwitz, had you heard of Auschwitz?
At that time we already knew, and I could see the chimneys from the crematorium belching smell from the flesh. As the train backed into the Auschwitz, there was a fence to the right and a fence to the left. Behind the fence from the right was another prisoner. He was there. He must have been working the crematorium. So he comes up to the fence and asks one question. From when he came to you, even? You understand Yiddish?
Yeah, I know what you're saying, yeah.
Tell him from Udem. That was the first question. The second thing he says, Ob die Ost der Stickel breut, warf er rübe. Die Ost duschen schon daufen, which means if you have a piece of bread, throw it over the fence, you won't need it anymore.
Huh. Do you remember anything, when you arrived in Auschwitz, was it during the day or at night?
It was during the day.
Now, on how many days was the train ride there?
I don't remember exactly how many days, but when we were back into Auschwitz. We, a famous disembarking order, and the guy on the right with this attack dog right next to him just get and jump on you every chance they could. And they had this famous reselection. Somebody to the right, somebody to the left. And I thought that was going to be the end, but the war was not going well for the Germans, and they needed workers in Germany at that point because every German was in the army. So those who were selected, the healthiest one, were put back on the train, and the train pulled out of Auschwitz. When the train pulled out of Auschwitz, they gave a sigh of relief.
So how long were you in Auschwitz for?
We were Auschwitz, that was just one day. One day, that's all. I was glad of that.
Do you remember when you got to Auschwitz, were they playing music? Did you hear the orchestra playing music?
No.
Right. Now, when you took that train ride to Auschwitz, were you able to sit down in the car, or did you have to stand up?
There was a boxcar with nothing in there. If you can sit down on the floor, but the train was just, there was throwing you back and forth. There was a lot of people on the train.
And were there any windows?
Just a slot there to look out. And then they stopped at the open fields to have a bathroom stop. Everybody had to get out and have their bathroom stop and jump back on the train.
Did they give you any food or water?
Well, they had to give us something. There was very little.
Right. And who were you together with on that ride? Were you with your relatives or?
I tried to stay together with Teddy and the cousin, if we could. Though it wasn't always possible. That's all we had left already.
Right. How do you feel now that you're telling your story? I mean, you never really told it before. I mean, how do you feel?
Well, I don't know if it feels good or bad, but you got to get it off your chest. You got to get it off your chest. Maybe it's going to be left for somebody. I guess it's enough for a day, probably.
Okay. Harvey, the last time we were talking, what do you remember about leaving Auschwitz? You know, the last time you got back on the train?
Well, a sigh of relief when the train pulled out of Auschwitz. Just watching the chimneys go and the smoke, and particularly after that guy confronted me, asked for bread and says, I won't need the bread anymore, I should give it to him. That was a sigh of relief to pull out.
Right. Okay.
The train continued, and we wound up at the...
Was this the same train that you were on, or you think it was a different train?
Same train. We just got off to disembark. They made the famous selections, and we put us back on the same train.
Okay. And then, where did you go?
The train moved, and we wound up at the concentration camp in Reiningen.
Reiningen,
which is a town, the biggest town nearby is Stuttgart.
Okay.
The camp was outside the town. The town of Reiningen at that time, I understand now, had 8,000 people. Now it's over a million.
Do you have any idea how long you were on the train for?
No, I don't.
Okay. And did you arrive in Reiningen during the day or at night?
We arrived during the day. There were other prisoners there already. There were prisoners there. Reiningen is not too far from France, I think. It's in that area, not too Stuttgart, France. And there were prisoners there from France and other areas too already. We weren't the only ones there. There were prisoners there from before.
And what happened when you arrived? What did they do?
We disembarked, assigned us to barracks, and going on the working assignments every day. We were working in a place. They had stone quarries there. You know what stone quarries?
Yeah.
And they gave us hand picks to chip at the quarries. And we understand after the war what they were working on. We were supposed to build an underground factory for the Messerschmitt fighter planes. The Messerschmitt was the German fighter plane. And the Allied planes were very effective to build their factories, and they wanted to build an underground factory deep under the stone quarries. We never accomplished that, but we were chipping away with very, very little energy. And at one time they gave me an air hammer. You know what the air
hammer?
And they asked me to lift it up and chip on the wall. I couldn't even lift up the air hammer off the floor. They asked me to pick it up and use it on the sidewall. It was impossible. If you didn't do it, you got beaten up. That was the work.
And now, were you beaten up a lot?
Yes, we were hit, and the time you didn't perform, you were kicked and beaten. And we were there for a few months, and then they took 500 of us and shipped out to another camp nearby, another little town, Unterrichtingen.
Now, when you were in Weingen, how long a walk was it to work?
Well,
from the barracks,
at least a half an hour more, and we were walking through the little town, but the townspeople now claim they didn't know anything about it, which is a lie, because we went back there I think 3 years ago for a memorial. They put up a memorial, and there were some townspeople, and they claimed they didn't know anything about it. There's no way they couldn't have.
Right, so they saw you going back and forth?
Yes. I remember seeing on the doors, they had something there during harvest time. They put out some harvesting stuff and stuff like that. But they claimed they didn't know anything about it. The person who organized that memorial thing, I think it must have been 3 years ago, he was a young German growing up over there, and he asked the parents, who are those people? He saw us being marched and pushed and kicked along every morning and every night on the way back to the camp. He said, oh, there were nobodies. He wouldn't tell him what it was. But when he got a little older, he became a professor of history. He started doing research and found out it was a concentration camp there. And when the townspeople decided to put up a housing project on the spot where the camp was, he organized something over there. He went to the city council and says, you can't do that, you got to put up some kind of a memorial. And he got in touch with some people in New York to get in touch with some of the survivors, if they know where they are and who they are. And they invited us over there to come to the opening up of the memorial. It was a sight, because when we first got to Weingen, we came in a boxcar in a concentration camp uniform, and when this time we got a special invitation from the Lord Mayor of the city of Weingen with two airline tickets for me and my spouse to come for the unveiling of the memorial.
How many people showed up?
There were quite a few, maybe about 40-some survivors, some of them from Israel, some from Australia, France. And at first, they actually got two invitations. One was for the groundbreaking ceremony the year before, but that was during Passover, and I didn't want to leave Passover here. But when they actually got ready to opening up the memorial, people tucked me in, and we should go, so we went. I also wanted to see if the Germans are still the animals they were during the war, or they became more human. Well, the people we met there, we met some townspeople there, and they were very. They all say they didn't know anything about it, which is not true.
Did you know any of the other survivors?
Except my cousins, I didn't know. We didn't have any time to socialize in the camp. It was just another guy in the same uniform next to you. There was no socializing. Didn't know anybody.
No, I mean when you went back this time.
Except my cousin.
Oh, you didn't know. Oh, you didn't have time to talk to the other people.
No.
No.
It was. The one guy was there. He actually came from Hungary, and I asked him how he wound up with us because we were mostly people from our hometown, from Radom. The Germans didn't come into Hungary until 1944, late.
Right.
This is the time when we were being transported to Auschwitz, so he was attached to our transport, so he was together with us.
Right, so how did he...
Well, when the Germans got in there, they started exporting people to Auschwitz, and our transport was at that time arriving to Auschwitz.
Oh, right, so you know, I see,
He got hooked up with us.
Right.
And he came here to the Washington area, I think. He was working for the government.
Oh, do you remember his name?
No, he wasn't the... He was drafted in the U.S. Army, like I was. I was drafted to the Army.
Right.
And at one time, they said after basic training, we all shipping out. Half of you are going. One is going to Fort Benning, Georgia, and the other half is going to Germany. And they assigned me to go to Germany, and so I said, I'm not going. I just got back there not long ago.
Right. So what were the barracks like in Vaihingen?
They were long barracks, like old the others, and they weren't really clean, hard, and it was a wooden floor. They tried to keep it clean as possible, but it was impossible to keep it clean. The outhouse was outside, and there was a washroom. You washed your face if you wanted to.
Right, and were you able to take a shower ever?
Well, there was a hanging water hose outside, and if it was warm enough, you just went under it. Otherwise, you just didn't take any showers.
Did a lot of people die in Vaihingen when you were there?
Oh, they were just dying like flies. They were just we were laying in just like sardines, one next to the other, like on a platform. And the first thing at least what I did and everybody else did, you touch the person to the right and person to the left. If he was cold, you just threw him over the hill. If he was warm, it was a sign he was alive.
Did people die at work?
I never noticed that. But a lot of people died.
And did they count you? There, in the morning, did they have an appeal?
Yeah, we lined up. We lined up, and I don't remember whether they counted or not. And we marched us out through the gate. They may have counted. And there was nobody escaped. There was no place for him to go.
Oh, okay. Do you remember any other stories that happened in Vaihingen?
Not too much. From Vaihingen, I was sent to another camp nearby, Unterrichtingen.
How many months were you in Vaihingen, do you think?
Several months, maybe 4, 5, 6, something like that. Then I was sent to Unterrichtingen.
Were you in Vaihingen during the winter?
Yes, it was part of the winter, and then the other part of the winter I spent in Unterrichtingen. I didn't know what we were working on. Later on, I found out that it was building an airport.
Right. I mean, in Vaihingen, how did you stay warm there?
We weren't very warm. There was a little potbelly stove in the middle, if you had any firewood, you made a fire. Otherwise, we just didn't bother. We had no gloves, no woolen cloths, just the pajama uniform. That period. That's it.
Okay, do you remember anything?
Shoes were a wooden sole, and wrapped around with a shmata to hold on to. That's all.
Do you remember anything about the food they gave you there?
There wasn't much food. The food was soup, a little soup in the evening. The soup was about one barley chasing the other, a little warm soup. And you got a ration of bread in the evening. That's supposed to last you until the next evening. The bread was always to be divided amongst uneven numbers, either 7 or 9. They wanted us to fight like animals. Over the crumb. So we usually devised a little scale with a couple of wires on the side and just make sure that's equally divided. And the bread was black and very sticky, like a pound or a kilogram of bread didn't cut in too many pieces. That piece you got in the evening is supposed to last you until the next night. Sometimes I was strong enough, because you also got a little bit of soup in the evening. I figure I drink the soup, and since we don't have to work at night, I can lie down and use up less energy. And I used to try to save that slice of bread and put it under my head while I was sleeping. Or sometimes you lost it, somebody else reached over and got it. But maybe they were hungrier than I was.
Did you ever trade things with other people?
No, I didn't smoke, so I didn't have any reason. The only people who traded was if it was lucky enough to pick up a cigarette butt, you would trade it for that piece of bread. There was nothing else to trade for.
Great.
From there, 500 of us were transported to Unterrichtingen, which is a small town not too far from there. I don't know how many miles it was. It was quite a few miles, not a long distance.
Now, do you know why you were taken out? Was there a selection? Did they ask for certain types of people?
Oh, they just lined up and they just counted off 500. We didn't volunteer. You didn't do anything. You lined up in the morning for what we usually do, and they just counted up 500, and they just took us out today. We wound up over there. We didn't know what we were working on. Later on, after we find out they were building an airport. And I remember one time I was in that camp already, and that was already during the Battle of the Bulge. That was December of 1944 already. And I was assigned, another guy and I were assigned a duty to pull a wagon back to Weingen to get supplies, because Weingen was a bigger camp. This was a sub-camp of Weingen.
Right.
And as we were walking along in the snow, and that snow was just to stick to the wooden shoes. I think I heard the two guards behind us accompanying us talking about the Battle of the Boat. You know what that was?
Yep.
It was the Germans' counterattack.
Yep.
And they were talking about if we don't succeed, it's going to be all over with. So I was happy to hear that. And I also heard them say, as we pass through such and such village, they're going to stop and go to visit their girlfriends. So they asked us to pull. They told us to pull the wagon next to the barn and locked us into the barn. And before they locked us in at the barn, I looked around to see where is the farmhouse, how far away is. I saw it. Once we got into the barn, I looked up and I saw a window on the top. And I made sure that I put the wagon right next to the barn. I asked the other guy if he can push me up to the window. I'll try to open up the window and go over the top and see if I can go to the farmhouse and maybe get some food. I had a lot of nerve in those days.
Wait, so, wait, this wagon was inside the barn or outside?
Outside. I put it right next to the barn.
Oh, so that way if you climbed up on the window, you could go onto the top of the wagon?
Yeah, I used my brains. So I asked him to push me up to the window, and I climbed down and get on the wagon, and then come down and go to the farmhouse, and I did that exactly. I'm sure that the two guards were in the same farmhouse, but they were busy with their girlfriends. So I went to the farmhouse and knocked on the door, and the housefrau came to the door, and I asked if for some bread. So she went back and got me some bread. I went back on the wagon and asked the guy to pull me back in, and they didn't know anything about it. So we had something to eat.
Hey, do you know what was on the wagon?
There was nothing. That was... We were supposed to go to get the supplies. There was nothing on the wagon yet.
Right. Do you know what kind of supplies you were supposed to get?
They're supposed to get some food for the little town, for the camp in Interixigen. The supplies were in the bigger, in Reingen, in the bigger camp.
Right.
So that after they got finished with their girlfriends, we pulled the wagon back towards Reingen, and we got the supplies. You know, we had to have supplies like some bread and some barley to cook. That we were using. We loaded that up, whatever we had, and then we pulled it back into Interixigen.
Right. How many days did that trip take?
No, it was just couple of hours. Interixing is not too far from Reingen.
Oh, okay.
Maybe two or three hours. I also remember, I just remember, I think, while we were in Reingen, I noticed the civilian guard. We were escorted with the army, by the soldiers, and then on the work site, there was a civilian guard. I think he used to live in Stuttgart. He used to oversee us. He used to kick the people who didn't perform the job right, what we were working on. I noticed that it was wintertime coat, and I noticed he didn't have any gloves on, because we had none either. But I was trying to organize something. So I asked him if he could bring me some cloth, a needle and thread. I would take it to my uncle Weisbord. I told him he's an expert. He could make anything. And make him a pair of gloves. Well, Uncle Weisbord, you know Uncle Weisbord from the story, all right?
Yep, yep.
He made the gloves, and I took them back to him, so I got some bread and brought it back for me and for Uncle and for my cousin. So I became friendly with that guy. Since then, he didn't kick me. But after the war, I remember about this guy. He was charged by some of the former prisoners for doing cruelty to them. And he had a trial over there, and he sent me, his attorney sent me a letter if I would come to testify on his behalf. I really couldn't do it. Even he treated me all right after I did the incident with the gloves, but what he did to the others, he really... wasn't humane, so I declined to go to testify on his behalf.
Huh. Right.
So.
Okay. And how long were you in Interixigen?
In Interixigen, I was there in through the winter of 1945. It must have been maybe March of 45, and I was walking along, marching along to the work. It was a lot of snow at that time in Germany, and my wooden platforms collected a lot of snow, and I obviously didn't march fast enough for the guards. And they kicked me in the leg. We didn't have much blood anymore in our system, very thin. And my leg got infected.
Oh.
I couldn't work anymore. So they, after laying there, if that would have happened previously, I would have been shot. But the war was not going in their favor. The Allies were already on German soil. They were thinking of their survival. So they sent me back on a wagon to Weingen, because it was a bigger camp. And that must have been March already, or 45. And I was laying there because my leg was infected already. I couldn't walk. So my uncle Weisbord had saved a piece of bread. He threw me over under the shoulders. He carried me into a guy who could cut open my leg to relieve the infection. And I was just laying there with a number of other sick people. They were all had typhoid fever, but I already had typhoid fever previously, so the typhoid fever didn't affect me. So we were just laying there, and because there was no medicine, nothing, like, at least I had a bunk to lay on. Then in the, must have been late March, they came in, there's an order, we evacuating the camp. Every able-bodied person is marching up, and at that time...
Well, I have a question. What did you do in Thüringen? I mean, what kind of camp was this?
It was a similar camp like Weingen, but they found out they were building an airport.
So what were you doing?
Digging, chipping away at the stone. There was a lot of stone quarries there. Chipping away, loading them on the wagons.
So this was very hard work?
Very hard, yeah. Because particularly when they gave you a pick, they just... not just the chip in the bottom, but the chip on the sidewall. Then I remember towards the end, they gave me an air hammer. And they asked me to lift it up and drill in the wall. I couldn't even lift it up the ground, much less to lift it up and push it against the wall to drill there.
I mean, did that happen in Weingen or Thüringen?
Weingen also, and in Thüringen also. And also, a lot of times you had to work with that pick. Just hit it away with the pick, and the cold winter frost with the... No gloves, no nothing. No.
Now, did you sleep together in this, with your uncle and your cousins?
In Ryan, yes. In the barrack.
Right, but what about in Thüringen?
They weren't in the Thüringen. They stayed in Ryan.
You were taken separately.
Yeah.
Why weren't you able to stay together with them?
They needed 500 people. We lined up in the morning, and they just picked me amongst the 500 people to go
there. I mean, didn't you always try to stay together with them so you wouldn't be separated?
I tried, of no use, and I was screaming. They hit me over the head. They said, there's no use. You go there.
So were you pretty scared to be separated from them?
It bothered me a great deal, but you get used to it. You get used to it, so... wound up in the Thüringen, and
so how was it? I mean, you know, now you weren't in the, you weren't able to work in the tailor shop with them.
Well, I wasn't in the tailor shop, but the tailor shop was only like we were in the camp in Radom.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I got mixed up. You're right. Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
No such a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Overworking, that was finished with that. But still, I wanted to be together. That's all the family we have, and my uncle and...
How was your uncle able to handle working in the stone quarry?
Well, he was still younger. He was only in the 40s. He managed.
So, were the conditions worse in Thüringen than in Weingen, or were they the same, or...?
Similar thing.
And did you have any friends when you were in Thüringen? Did you know any of the other people?
I had a cousin. Well, he was married to my cousin. My cousin didn't survive. He was surviving. He was there. But we weren't close. I wasn't as close to him as I were with the Weisbords. With the Weisbords, we were close before the war and close during the war. So direction and I was basically by myself.
Okay.
Dave and I was kicked because I didn't march fast enough to go to work because my wooden clappers were stuck with snow, so I was kicked by the guard and my leg got infected, and they sent me back to Weiningen.
Yeah. Did you know anything about the Jewish holidays?
Not at that point. Well, in Weiningen, we knew about Yom Kippur. We had a cousin from our hometown was with us in Weiningen. I don't know whether he kept track or we knew when Yom Kippur was. So when they brought that little rush, that little bit of soup at 12 o'clock during Yom Kippur, I didn't drink it. I saved it until that night. Until that night after Yom Kippur was over with. We had a little service at Weiningen during Yom Kippur in a distant barrack away from the guards.
So, when you were injured in Terixingen, is that why they brought you back to Weiningen?
Yes, they were beginning to think of their own salvation. That was already March of 1945.
I mean, why do you think they didn't just let you die?
Well, it was too close to their end, and they were beginning to think maybe people were going to be point a finger at what happened, so they sent me back to Interesingen. I probably would have died over there. They threw me in the barrack with people with typhoid fever. They figure I'm going to die anyway. But Uncle Pesach had a little bread and threw me over the shoulder and carried me into the guy and says, cut him up and relieve the infection. So they did that, and we were laying there on the sick barrack. It was the end of March, and the order came to evacuate the camp. So they...
Do you remember any other stories from Terixingen?
No, nothing excited, nothing happened. People were dying, you just threw them over the hill. I don't know whether they were buried or were just laying there, that's it.
You know, but didn't they always need to know how many people there were all the time? Didn't they always have to, you know, weren't they, how many times a day did they count you?
They kept track, because I understand after the war, there's a list. If you go to the Holocaust Museum, you would see there's a list there. When I came in there, when I was sent in direction again, and when I came back to Weiningen sick, what my sickness was, I never saw it, but a friend of mine is there at the Holocaust Museum, and he looked it up. It's all listed.
When you were in Auschwitz for that short period of time, you didn't get a number on your arm, did you?
No, because we only spent one day at Auschwitz.
Right.
We disembarked in the famous selection with those attack dogs, and we loaded that back on the same train and pulled out of there.
So, did you have a number, like, you know, when you were in Weiningen, or...?
We had a number sewn on our jacket. Yes, I think it was 24,000 something.
Yeah. Do you ever remember having to do exercises? Did they ever ask you to, mitzen on, mitzen off, or...?
No.
No? Do you ever remember singing songs on the way to work, or on the...
No.
Nothing like that? Okay.
I remember many times when they were marching us. We passed by other camps. There was a camp of prisoners of war. They were always treated a little bit better. And there was another camp of Russians working there. They were not in concentration camp uniforms. They were just workers. The whole country of Germany was full with camps. It was either concentration camps of work camps.
Right. Okay.
They didn't have any of their own male people. Everybody was in the army, so they needed workers, and we were the workers.
Right. Okay. So then what happened? So what do you remember about being liberated?
Well, that's in the end of March, there came the order in Vaihingen evacuating the camp. So every able-bodied person is up, and they, at that time, Uncle Weisbord and son Teddy and the others, they marched them out on a dead march towards Dachau. But those who were sick, which was myself and the others, lay in the remained behind with a few guards. I always listened to the shooting of the artillery and the tanks that were getting closer and closer, and the Allied aircraft, instead flying from 10,000 feet above and bombing, they were flying rooftop already. So I knew that the front was right nearby. I learned to listen. This was my intelligence. So after they evacuated the camp, they left the sick ones, including myself, and a few guards. We just didn't get much to eat anymore. Then it was April 7, 1945. I looked up from my bunk through that little window, and I didn't see the guard tower. I looked at the other window, I didn't see anybody either. We were all laying there sick, and we got nothing to eat for several days since they marched, evacuated the camp, except for the sick people. So I got up and walked up to the gate, and I threw the gate open. I didn't wait for our troops to come. I always see pictures from other camps. The prisoners are waiting behind the gate until the Allies, the British or the U.S. forces, come and open up the gate. I opened up the gate by myself and walked out from the camp to see if I can find something to eat. So the first thing I saw was a dead horse laying there. The Germans were using horses to pull their wagons besides the motorized equipment.
Right.
So I went back to the barrack and got a knife and cut open my skin. Then I got a piece of meat. I was starving to death. I haven't had anything to eat for a few days. And I went back to the barrack, made a little fire, and made myself a kosher steak.
Now, were you by yourself or were there a lot of other people?
There were six people. They were still lying on their bunks. They couldn't even get off. Then I looked around and I asked, I need one more person as a volunteer to go out with me and see what we can find out, because we're all going to starve here. So I found one person volunteered with me. I don't know the name or anything. It was just another guy, another prisoner. We walked out the camp. The camp was always outside the town. And we walked through that little town of Vaihingen, which the camp was named after the town. And I didn't see a single soul. I didn't see a cat or a dog walking. I looked up in the windows, and the windows had some white sheets hanging out as a sign of surrender. I could hear the artillery firing, the tanks firing. For all I know, those last guards might have been hiding there, but I didn't care. We kept walking until we left the town. You know, it was an open field, so we kept just... I understand now the town at that time had about 8,000 people. Now it's over a million. But we kept walking out of the town, and it was an open field, and we kept walking and walking. In the distance, I saw tanks parked. I didn't know who they belonged, whether they were German tanks or who they were. So we kept walking until we got too close to the tanks, and two soldiers jumped out with their guns drawn and yelled out in French. I figure I'm lucky they're not German tanks. So the first thing I did, didn't know any French, so I pointed to my mouth, I need something to eat. So one of them went back into the tank and brought out a little tiny bag of sugar. That's all he probably had to sweeten his coffee. So I held out my hand, and he put in some sugar, and I threw it in my mouth. The other guy did the same thing. And I stood there and said, how did I get these two soldiers to come with me back to the camp so they see what is going on over there? People were just dying left and right, sick. Oh, the sick ones were left. So I only knew one French word, mademoiselle. So I said, mademoiselle, this way, where I came from. We didn't have any mademoiselles.
Right.
So, but I get these two soldiers didn't even go back to the tank commander to ask for permission. They just kept walking with me with their guns drawn. And we walked back to the town, and we came until we came to the camp, and they saw what was going on.
Now,
they saw what it is.
When you were liberated, how much do you think you weighed?
I don't know about the pounds. In pounds, probably about 90 pounds.
Now, did you look like the people when we see pictures of concentration camps?
Worse. We look like a pirates. And you were just flat, skinny, and the eyes drawn. There's no pictures, except I didn't stay behind the bars. I went to look for the liberators. So I got back those two soldiers, and they went back to the commander, and they brought some doctors and some nurses and some food. Now, the war was still on for another month. That was April 7, 1945. The war didn't end until May 8. We could hear the shooting because the front was not too far from us.
When you were in the camps, did you know what day it was every day?
I didn't know the date of the 12th and the 13th, but we knew it was...